70% of Americans have had a paranormal experience. Tonight, we have a selection of haunts from friends of the show, listeners, and of course our hosts, in part 3 of our 100th episode, Spooktacular.
Hello and welcome to the Hometown Haunts podcast, the podcast where we highlight the strange and spooky stories submitted to us by our listeners. I'm your host, Kat Cloco, and along with me on this journey into the strange and supernatural are my friends Christina Wald and Jen Kohler.
Hey!
Hello!
Hello! It has been a minute since we recorded last. Mm-hmm. This is technically part 3 of our 100 episode extravaganza. It's so great. We stretched it an extra month.
You know,
we had an eclipse.
Quality takes time.
Yes, quality does take time. And so do comic books and illustrations.
Yes,
which is we've been doing a lot of. So to catch up with all of our listeners, what have we all been up to in the past since the last time we recorded, which I believe was before Frogman Festival?
I have completed my latest picture book and sketched another, and wow. So I'm working on those, and I've also been working on a bunch of different projects and some illustrations, some small comic projects, just all sorts of things. It's been very crazy, and then also I have been working on just different travel stuff. I mean, our Romania trip is coming up in June, and I'm going to be teaching a workshop in Tuscany in 2025 in May.
I'm super interested in that one.
I know, it should be really cool. I'm super excited about it. And the lady that started this program used to live in Cincinnati. Well, it's interesting because she lived in Cincinnati, then she moved to Seattle, and then she moved to Tuscany.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I know. I mean, I'd like that trajectory. I wouldn't mind living in Tuscany.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been crazy. What about you all?
Let's see. I finished a comic book and I've sent it to the printers, and it arrives back here next week.
Yay!
So hopefully this time next week, I'll be waving a new comic book and over my head going, look at what I did, guys. I did something cool. So yeah, it's the Zombio mini comics. So for a view that are like all four of you that are familiar with them, I basically transformed my partner's elementary school stories into a graphic novel. So it ended up being 81 pages and it's in full color. And I did a little interview with him to go, hey, why did you write this? What was your inspiration? And so it's, and then also shared sketchbook illustrations and things of the process of putting it together. So it's really fun. It comes out it will be out in time for the Alaska Robotics Mini Con in Juneau at the end of this month. It will be available at Cartoon Crossroads Columbus this September, because I'll be there.
Yay!
Thank you. That was a worrying month. Like, there's always that time in between when you submit an application and then hearing back from it, and you're just like, am I going? Because my income and livelihood depends on these things.
It's hard to plan life around the unknown, isn't it?
It is. So,
and so many of these shows, the jury is so opaque. For example, cons like Gen Con, I've heard that one is very mercurial as to whether you get in or not.
Yeah. And
never give you guidelines or a reason as to why you wouldn't be accepted, or
not generally. No. I mean, for what my friends that I mean, friends of mine that have done magic sometimes get rejected from the Gen Con or show. I feel really
Mostly what I've heard of is if they have too many of one style of illustrator or cartoonist, they start cutting off and saying, okay, we got enough of like children's and family cartoonists, we're going to go focus on other ones. That's generally what it is. So for some some conventions, like I have this weird style that is in it's very Cal artsy. It's not quite anime manga. It's not quite capes and tights. So some conventions are like, I don't think you're going to fit in real well. Some are like, yeah, we think you will. It's and also all these juries switch every few years. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just kind of this is life of being on the road and going doing direct sales through conventions. So that's the life. But other things, we had an eclipse yesterday. Mm-hmm. And Jen, you caught some beautiful photos of that.
Yes. I was super excited. I had never seen a total eclipse.
Really? So wow.
I mean, I've seen eclipses, but not like totality or or anything like that. And I decided I was going to try to shoot it for the first time. And it didn't start. When it started, I couldn't see because I normally look through my viewfinder. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to because I didn't want to burn my eyes out. So
That's smart.
I have a screen on the back that I could use, but it was so sunny that all I could see was my reflection in it.
Oh.
So I'm like, I can't see to set my aperture and my shutter speed and all that. And I can't find the damn sun with the filter on it.
Right.
So I was freaking out, but then eventually I figured it out and got some pretty cool photos that I still need to edit, but
yeah,
it got sunburned pretty bad, but totally worth it.
Where did you go see it?
In Markleville, Indiana. Friends of Christine's, they have a farm out there. Oh. And we just sat there. It was a small group of us. It was so quiet. It was beautiful. You know, my favorite part was when it got really cold, you know, when you felt the temperature difference.
Yeah, that was cool.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was nice and not having to be around a bunch of people. And I took so I drove through Brookville and Connorsville on my way there. And I drove past one of the dollhouse graves, that cemetery.
Did you take any pictures?
I didn't stop to take any pictures, okay. And then I drove back another way that somehow I ended up on Colerain.
Oh, wow.
But it was a really beautiful drive just through the country. And I had a hard time. Like, you can't look at the houses because you're going to drive off the road and you're going to end up in a ravine or a very deep ditch.
Yeah. Well, that's a neat experience.
Yeah, it was nice. Cool. And that's why I'm so tired.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm envious of everyone who got to see the basically sunset, the 360 sunset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Around. That was cool.
Yeah. So spoiler alert, I didn't get to see it. So, Christina, you got to see it too.
Yeah. We just did it from our driveway. I mean, we were at 99.5% totality and we saw it in 2017 because it went through Kentucky. And so we were able to watch it in Troy's parents' backyard by the lake, and it was really beautiful then. So this is the second total eclipse that we've seen.
Oh, cool.
And Vanessa, Katie, and a bunch of our friends went up to Fernald, and they were trying to get us to go there, but I just had too much work to get done. So we just stayed in the driveway and watched it. And it was really interesting because when it was like almost at the peak, like there was like a weird shadow going across the
there's shadow bands.
Cool. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah.
And I love the pictures. Some of the people that had really good cameras. I don't know if you caught this. There were some flares coming off the which were super cool.
I didn't get those. You know, I had a hard time because it's such a short amount of time and I'm inexperienced in photographing these kind of things. So I generally don't mess with shutter speeds and all of that and exposure because my camera just automatically does it. And I just don't want to think about it most of the time, but for this, you really had to, but then you don't want to be looking at your camera, trying to change your aperture while you're trying to see what's going on in front of you.
Okay.
So I just kind of I clicked on my shutter and I just kind of let it go and I watched it and then I looked back at my photos and you can see it's like my camera moved in a circle because half of it, I have like 10 photos. It starts here and then it goes down here, it goes down below the frame and then it comes back.
Wow.
And at that time is when I was looking at the sky. I wasn't looking at the camera.
It wasn't on a tripod?
No, because the angle was too steep. Mm. I couldn't.
You didn't have one on a monopod?
No. And I didn't bring it. I thought my tripod would be fine, but it was turned up so high, I would have had to basically lay on the ground, and I'm too old for that. Mm. So I just handheld it, and it turned out fine.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So Seattle had 15% totality.
Oh, that's all. Yeah, that's it's pretty far.
Yeah, Eastern Washington had 20%, but we had 15. It didn't matter. It rained. And it rained the entire morning. And so I sat and watched NASA's live feed from every single location from Mexico up through Canada. Okay. And that was fun. I will say family did get to go see it. Mm-hmm. One traveled to Indianapolis to go see it. And the parents went to Arkansas. So they got to see two different ones. But we unfortunately weren't able to make it out, but it was fun watching the live feed because every single location did a countdown till near totality. And then as soon as it hit full, like the ball dropping at New Year's Eve, everyone cheered, and it was for every single location.
Yeah.
Cheered, and they went berserk for it. So it was just really fun. And then you also got to hear the different NASA staff members talking about it at every single location. And then totality would happen, and you could hear them tear up from just being so excited about witnessing this. And then they would describe everything and seeing Jupiter and Venus, and then the shadow bands that would happen. That's a phenomena.
Yeah, the shadow
bands. It's hard to photograph. So if you got to see it, that's awesome. And
it was cool.
Yeah, it's super trippy. So I'm glad all of you got to see it. And
it was just me and Troy sitting outside watching.
Yeah, that sounds like a good lunch break. Like just sitting outside watching.
I couldn't give up the day, the part of going all the way, leaving, and because I would have to shower and all the stuff like when you go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to stay in.
Yeah. And so 2033, March 30th, there will be a total solar eclipse in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Ooh. And
2044 in August is the next one for the lower 48. So your eclipse weather for this week, and we will see if we're still doing the podcast.
I think in 2044, I will be really old, and so I probably will not. Well, you never know. I'll be
How old will I be in 2033?
70s, I think. 76 or so.
Let's see. Hold on.
Well, just in 20 years, so I'll still be spry.
It's only 9 years away?
No, well, 2033 is 9 years away.
I was thinking of the one in
44. 44 is 20 years from now.
Oh, well, I could go up to Alaska. I've never been there. I'll be 55.
Yep.
No, that's a way to celebrate.
Be prepared for 12-hour sun. So as my friends who live up in Alaska were saying, it will be super trippy when it hits Fairbanks because it will be 12 hours of sun. And then for 4 minutes, it will go completely dark in the middle of the day. So it will be really weird.
When we were in Norway, it was cool. I mean, we weren't at the midnight sun height because we weren't that far north. We were in Bergen, and so it was light pretty much till 2 or 3 in the morning. Like, I don't know if it ever it got mostly dark, but that gray, like most of the night was gray, and I think it had like maybe 2 hours of
darkness.
Yeah, it's cool. Juneau, they have blackout shades.
I was gonna say in Juneau, we had blackout shades, and it got dark around midnight, and then it was dawn at 4 a.m. And the blackout shades were great. They worked perfectly fine. What I was not anticipating were the ravens coming out at 4 a.m. and then goat squawking next to my door and window. So I hear this like that at 4 a.m. I fell out of my bed that first time that happened.
Oh, wow.
I was just like, what is happening? And Yeah, I opened the window, the curtain, and there's a big old raven sitting on the railing in front of my motel room door, and it's like, so it was like, nature!
Wake up! We don't care if you're sleeping.
Wake up, woman!
Well, that's
Do
funny.
You have bread? Maybe a bagel.
I think we went, when Vanessa and I went to Guatemala a few years ago, I think that was 2018. When we went to Citical, we stayed in the town of Flores, and it was Flores. I'll look it up. Anyway, it was so loud. I've never heard birds this loud in the morning. Like birds and screaming cats.
Yeah, and the thing that I heard from friends that were primatologist was howler monkeys are just terrible to try to sleep through, because if you're in the jungles, you'll just hear them going all the time. So you have all the birds and then howler monkeys.
Oh wow.
We didn't hear howler monkeys there, but they were there when we were at the pyramids. We heard them there, and then when we were in Costa Rica, I had howler monkeys throwing sticks at me while I was sketching.
Oh fun. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't like
added a new challenge.
Well, I didn't actually see the howler monkeys. They threw stuff at me.
It wasn't poo, was it?
No, it was sticks.
Okay.
It was like, I guess it was really early because I would get up every morning because it's on the equator. So sunrise was like at 5 or 4 in the morning. And so I would go there and sketch and it was super, watch the sunrise. And, it was a nice quiet, but the howler monkeys were there.
Yep.
The howler monkeys were my companions.
Yeah. Just to let you know that it's their world and not yours.
True. Yeah. I think they were letting me know that very definitely. It was really funny. But there's the howl is so weird.
Yeah.
Yes. It's spooky.
Does it sound like a scream or?
Gosh, I wish I knew how to describe it. How would you describe it? It's like a roar almost.
It's kind of like a roar, so I'm trying to remember. It's like it is like a roar, and it sounds very human, but you know it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what throws people off. And it can be sustained. So it's just, and then when you have one scream, then another one decides to join. And then
you gotta talk to each other.
Yeah.
No. And then you're like, oh my God, what is this hell I'm in?
Yeah. Kind of like, why did I do this to myself? The mosquitoes are the size of bats. Yeah, the spiders are the size of cats.
Mm-mm.
And then we have howler monkeys.
I mean, if you want to try, I am all for people going to the rainforest and the jungle and all that, but I'll just look at pictures. Thank you. Because I don't want bugs burning in now.
Yeah.
Now the town is called Flores. I was right first. Flores. Okay. Yeah. Flores. And it's really a pretty little town, really close to Tikal. I mean, the howler monkeys, they never bothered us or anything. I mean, you just hear them. It's a very distinctive sound.
They're not like macaques that are up in your face. Speaking of things that we can take photos of and look fondly back on, we have an update on Bobby Mackey's Music World, which we just spent the past 2 episodes doing. And right after we wrapped up part 2, we got the devastating news that they are tearing down the building that was built in 1921.
Yep.
So have you made your last ghost tour ticket purchases yet?
Yes.
Well, we go on May 4th. It was a reservation because we have to pay cash.
Yeah. I know. I was thinking that as well.
So you pay cash when you go, but Chris, Katie, Christina, and I are going.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Bring a recorder if I don't know what kind of audio you'll get, but that's really it. It's not the end of an era because they plan on rebuilding a 1-story bar on top of the property. And that's supposed to be done around 2026, according to the Cincinnati Inquirer. Mm-hmm. And they've already moved, as we had reported in an earlier episode, to Mugby's Biker Bar in Florence. So all that's being done now at the original location is just the ghost hunts, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
But Bobby Mackey's The building that was built in 1921 is probably full of asbestos and lead. It's being torn down. And they're keeping the hellhole and a few other landmarks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
well, you gotta and keep the hellhole.
Yeah, they gotta keep the hellhole. That's the moneymaker. And they're putting it behind plexiglass. So
so you can't fall in.
Yeah, I was gonna say so you can't twist your ankle, but falling in is bad too.
You know, it works.
Yeah.
I just hope it doesn't, because you'll hear of projects like this and that they're going to rebuild or whatever. I just hope something doesn't happen to where it doesn't get rebuilt.
Yeah, that's right. Very true.
That's my fear, because yeah. I do believe we need this little cultural icon in our area.
It's our fun, weird history icon. It keeps Kentucky weird. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just, and also like we did in our previous episodes, the deep dive history, it's been around since basically Newport and Wilder was established.
Yeah.
Like something has constantly been there. And I hope that they put kind of signage to say what kind of history has been there. Mm-hmm. You have a variety. So maybe we could petition the state to do one of those plaques, the historical markers, if there isn't one up there already. But I don't think there is. Because Bobby Mackey's is just a touchstone culturally, just as for haunted locations and for music. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think I forgot to mention that Bobby Mackey wrote the song Joanna, which is about the ghost. That's Bobby Mackey's. Okay. I neglected to mention that in the previous. My goodness, my friend.
Well, there was a lot of information.
It's all the 100th episode, so this still feels
we're
like
still it we're still in this. So yeah, he wrote in 1988. It's a crooner country ballad about Joanna, and it talks. Mm-hmm. It's based off of the journal entries that they found. So and it was popular enough to make Bobby Mackey a household name back in the late 80s.
Wow, I didn't realize that he was known as a recording personality.
Yeah, that's actually how I knew of him first. I was like, I've heard of Bobby Mackey.
He was a country music star, right?
Yeah, he was a country music star. And then instead of going to Nashville, he decided to record stuff in Wilder because he's from the area. So got to keep it local.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure Cincinnati back in the day used to have a good music scene.
It does.
Yeah. But not just for country. I think R&B was one.
R&B. And they're trying to save one of the record buildings now from demolition. Okay.
What was it? King Records?
Yeah, King Records. Oh, yeah. That. So, Cincinnati, we have way more history in our city than people give us credit for.
Yeah.
I do like to wow people with the Pringle can. and the Magic 8-Ball, but yes, music. We have a lot of music too.
I always like to tell people Play-Doh was invented in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
So I many interesting it. Things. Star Wars toys.
Star Wars toys. Mm-hmm. Yes. So
I used to have the Bionic Woman in her Bionic Salon.
Oh. Cool. I didn't know she had a bionic salon.
No.
Well, I mean, you know, if she had to get her hair done, I mean, what else are you
going
to
do?
That is true.
I mean, you have to brush their hair and style it and fix her bionics. And
Yeah.
Did Lee Majors also have a salon?
No.
For his hair?
But I think he should have. I mean, why didn't he have one? I mean, it would have been great.
Someone needed to do the spray on tan.
I think his figure didn't even have, like, most male dolls didn't have rooted hair. Like, they were plastic molded.
Yeah. Heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An opportunity missed by the Barbie movie.
Yeah, right? Could have had awesome hair we could have played with and cut. And
yeah, they didn't. They
could have had a weird Ken, too, for weird Barbie.
Exactly. But we digress.
Yeah. All my Barbies were weird. Fun little side fact, I had a bunch of little Barbie dolls when I was little, and I would rip their heads off and transplant them onto other bodies.
Oh, wow. That sounds like that movie. Poor thing.
Toy Story?
You were Sid. You were Sid.
No, I was thinking.
Yeah, so when Kat was here for Frogman Festival, she stayed with me. Mm-hmm. And Chris, who's been on the show before, was also here. So they were just going back and forth about their experiences.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know who brought it up first, you or Chris, but
it was me out of frustration because they were driving me nuts. And then Chris was just like, oh my goodness, you get it too. And then we went on for like a half an hour ranting.
Yeah, apparently. So in my condo, its new building was built in 2021, 22. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, my patio, a little bit of a yard, not very big. And then there is a creek in a row of trees. Mm-hmm. I only recently saw the water because of the rain that we've had. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a bunch of trees kind of in a deep
ditch. I thought it was a drainage ditch.
You know, it could be. It probably is.
Yeah.
And you said that there were a bunch of ghosts just standing along the tree line, like all the way up and down, not just by me, but along.
Yeah, they were just the whole lining property.
Yeah.
They were like 2 to 3 people deep, shoulder to shoulder. And it was just a variety of spirits from all time eras, mm-hmm. genders, sizes, ages. Yeah. And they were just all lined up along basically what would have been the property line.
Mm-hmm.
And
like in a queue, like they were lined
up? Queue. It was like, oh my goodness, this is the weirdest reference. Like the bagpipers from Bedknobs and Broomsticks. They were just lined up, not even waiting to charge. They were just standing there watching us. And
oh, that is so weird.
It was very weird.
Have you ever seen anything like that?
The only time I've seen something like that was when we did the Doty Homestead Cemetery. When we got out of the car, I remember looking up and I think I was with Katie because she rode with me there. And I remember looking up and seeing just a line of men and women. They were all middle to older age, wearing black dresses or black slacks and a jacket and black hats. And they kind of reminded me of how the pilgrims dressed, but it was quite clearly early 1800s wear. And I remember looking at them and seeing the stark black and white outfits and going, well, we have a welcoming party. And Katie was just like, no, thank you. We're not walking further. And they were literally in the Doty family cemetery. You have to go up a little embankment before getting to the rest of the cemetery. And they were just standing at the edge of that embankment, looking down at us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how weird. Well, they got the high ground.
Yeah. What are you doing here?
Yeah, basically. And then it was the, oh crap, she can see us bit. So
yeah,
which is always kind of funny when they scatter, but
well,
at any rate, so with
okay, go ahead.
So with your apartment building, I just,
condo.
I
think, sorry. Condo. I paid for condo. Okay.
Your condo.
Thank you.
So at your condo, I was looking out and I can just sense them because you have all of your curtains down at this time of night.
Yeah.
And I was just like, they're just standing there at the line, staring at the building all the way down the building. It wasn't just at your condo. Mm-hmm. And then Chris was just like, oh my gosh, I get it too. And then we just kind of ranted at them. And everybody that was on the other side just took one big old step back. Like, these two ladies know we're here.
Yeah.
And then according to Chris, they kept popping in, basically like phasing through the wall. Like, hey, I got something to talk about. And Chris is like, no, I'm sleeping. Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Yeah, leave me alone. No one bothered me. And I was I felt like Gandalf with you shall not pass. Like you cannot go into this building.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So there's a line drawn. It's staying there. They can't cross over. They should not be bothering you or the cats.
I don't ever see or feel anything. A couple instances. One, wasn't too long after I moved in. I had my patio door open and I was making dinner and it was a nice day. And I heard someone walking through leaves. That's a very distinct sound, and it got closer. And I expected to see someone to walk across where by my door. Didn't see anybody. Didn't see a thing. Wow. That kind of freaked me out because, you know, it was still green out, like somebody could have been hiding in the in the trees, but I don't think someone was hiding in the trees because it's a really steep, you know. So I don't know what that was, if I just didn't see the person or they stopped before they got to my door. Mm-hmm. But then little Miss Clover, ever since I moved in, she will be sitting on my lap. Did you just see that?
What the heck just happened?
I don't know.
Clover's giving you a thumbs up.
I don't know. Maybe it's those ghosts.
Okay, that was fucking weird. Excuse me, weird.
That was okay. Weird. How did that happen?
Streamyard, don't be creepy. Okay? God.
Oh my gosh. Weird. Clover gave a thumbs up.
Well, I had my thumb up, but why... Why it registered that is...
That was really weird.
That was really weird.
That was weird.
That was weird. Ah! Not a ghost.
No, it must just have any thumb. Sort of AI sort of thing. Like, if you do this, let's see if it does it on mine.
So Clover, my dear, sweet, wonderful kitty, she'd be sitting on my lap, and then she would just, her eyes would get real big. You know, with the dilated pupils, and then she would just be staring at something behind me. And I'd turn around, nothing there, but she's intent on something. And I'm like, and then I'd go, stop it. Stop it. You're freaking me out. And she hadn't been doing it for a while. And then the other day she did it. And I'm like, why are you looking? What? No, stop it. Because normally when
on that dust.
When her eyes get real big like that is when she's about ready to bolt or freak out or.
Well, do you think there was misplaced, like, because where you saw those people before was in a graveyard. Do you think there's a graveyard close that perhaps was.
There could be. I don't know. And there, it could be just a farmer settler graveyard that has been lost to time. As we know, there's plenty of those.
Yeah. So, and I don't know what this was before it was built, but Fisher bought a pretty big chunk of land.
I'm going to guess a farm.
It had to have been a farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell. And so anyway, there you have that group of people and So fun thing with walking. This reminded me of a different ghost story, and this comes from my college days. Mm-hmm. So, and I know I haven't shared this one, but I wrote about it in one of my books. So basically, I lived in an old post-World War II, it had been built for servicemen very quickly, kind of apartment building on Indiana University's campus. And I remember going across the street, there was a convenience store in a very good Chinese restaurant. So I'd be constantly going over there, picking up things and then getting dinner. Mm-hmm. And I remember standing, and it was dusk and on a spring day. And I'm standing there waiting for the light to turn on 3rd Street. And there's a couple next to me who's kind of just being all lovey dovey. Mm-hmm. And I'm just standing there kind of like, I'm just waiting to go pick up my food. And walking from the other side of the intersection to where the convenience store was just a pair of legs. It was in acid wash jeans. Mm. I could see the black studded belt and the checkered Vans slip-on shoes that were very dirty. Mm-hmm. And there was no torso.
Oh my God.
Okay.
And
was it bloody?
It was not bloody. It was just a pair of legs.
Huh.
And like, cut off at like where the hips were, and they were skin tight jeans too. They weren't, baggy jeans at all. And I'm just standing there looking at it. Kind of my eyes are furrowed like they are right now. And I'm trying to figure out what on earth am I watching? And then there's the couple next to me who are looking that direction, not registering a thing. They're just not seeing it. And it turned out a few years before I started going to school there, there was a massive auto accident that happened roughly where I had seen the legs appear from, and it killed 3 students.
Wow.
So, and I was just like, oh, maybe that's who I saw, just somebody walking down the street, like they were trying to leave the accident and go home, and they were spirited in shock. So, yeah, that was interesting. There's quite a few ghosts on Indiana University's main campus, and that's one of them.
You know, after you and Chris both said that about the ghosts here, I'm like, well, I mean, there's got to be ghosts everywhere, you know, from all different times, or I mean, I'm sure somebody's died everywhere on the planet.
Yes.
At some point in time. Yes. So
there are more corpses underneath the earth than there are living people right now.
Really?
Yeah. Fun fact.
Huh.
Sorry. I've just grossed out all of our listening audience. No. We're like,
so it reminds me of, I don't know if people are familiar, Ryan Gosling has a band, or had a band called Dead Man's Bones.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Only did one album, and it was basically kind of Halloween themed, kind of ghost haunting theme. It's really good. I love it. But there's a song on there. Is this the
dude from Barbie again?
Yeah. The actor, Ryan Gosling. Yeah.
He's multi-talented.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Man's gorgeous. Love him. Anyway, there's a song on there. It's called Dead Man's Bones. And one of the lyrics is, everywhere you go, look at your feet, 6 feet deep, or dead man's bones. Mm-hmm. So that kind of reminded me of that. And I'm like, yeah, there's. So it doesn't surprise me if there's 200, 300 people from whatever time periods looking around out there, just curious into what's going on in the world around them.
I keep saying that the Ghosts TV show is the most accurate depiction of ghosts that I've ever seen put to television.
Yeah.
Like both the British and the American versions. I mean, it's comical, but it's basically they just float around and they just see what you're up to. And yes, they do comment about things.
Yeah.
So, it's just a little funny aside. Well, all right. So we got some listener stories.
Yeah.
Do you want to introduce the first one?
Sure. I'm sure everybody remembers Mark and Carrie from Erie, Appalachia, who we interviewed in episode 68. And they gave us a special greeting that we're going to play. And they have just recently moved to North Carolina. And they have experienced that their house has some of these friends we're talking about. But they've been seeing a lot of stuff. So we will listen to this and then comment on it.
Hi, Hometown Haunts.
Hello.
It's Mark and Carrie from Erie Travels.
And we have a bit of a story for you for your 100th episode. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah, we moved into a new house in Western North Carolina at the end of last year. And since we've been here, there's been a couple unusual occurrences.
It's largely when we go out on our trips, which are pretty numerous now, when we come home, there is a book from Mark's room left in front of the door to my critter and craft room, just neatly on the floor.
Yeah, it's been unusual. The previous owner who died in this house was a bit of a book nerd himself. So we think maybe he just picks up one of my mini books and wanders and suddenly can't get through a door with a book. So he just drops it. But anyway, we hope to explore more, and congratulations on 100 episodes, and looking forward to 100 more.
And we'll see you
on the other side.
I was going to say, thank you, Mark and Carrie, for submitting that story. That I love book reading ghosts. Yeah. I'm like, if I'm going to have someone haunt my house, I hope they're into books too.
Well, yeah. Is it always the same book, or it's a different book each time?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I will ask them
again. Yeah.
We can mention that in a future episode.
And I wonder is it a suggestion? Maybe they should read it?
maybe.
Or the ghost is trying to read it.
Book club. Yeah. Ooh, I love
that. That could be a nice zine. Haunted book club. Ghost book club.
Yeah. I like that. Oh yeah. And thank you, Mark and Carrie, for the shout out for the 100th episode. That is. And also we got to see them at Frogman Festival, which was awesome. So yeah.
And they do have a podcast. I believe it is called Eerie Travels.
Yeah.
And we will put a link in the show notes.
And their book is awesome. It was one of the most fun books on, well, Eerie Travels. Eerie Appalachia. Wow. I sounded super intelligent there. But it was so fun. It made me really appreciate the uniqueness of Appalachia and all the haulers and the culture that comes from it. And that we're kind of still learning about things that go bump in the night in the foothills and mountains. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that book. And I still recommend it to all people that I talk to if they stand around Audible long enough to hear me.
I believe it's on Audible now, too. So if you don't want to, you can listen to it now.
That's cool. Great.
Yeah, so that was really nice of them to share that.
Yeah. Yes.
It's kind of a nice welcome home gift, I guess.
Yeah,
that is. Cool. Somebody was watching over the house.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there could be much more scary sort of things to leave around.
Yes. All right.
And so now we have your mom's story?
Yes. So this one is Spooky Twins. It was told to me by my mother. And it's touching. This is kind of sad. So this one's Spooky Twins, and this is from Liz. When I was young, I had two friends who were a set of twins, and we'll call them Abby and Ben. We changed the names to protect the innocent. They lived two doors down from me in my very small town in Ohio, and we grew up together. In high school, Ben was diagnosed with a rapidly growing brain cancer and died 3 months later. This was the 1960s. We all mourned Ben, friends, and family attended his funeral, and Abby was heartbroken to lose her brother. A few months later, I was walking down the hallway to my locker when I found Ben standing there. He turned around and said, "Tell Abby I love her," and then walked away. I was stunned. After school, I told Abby what happened, and she was shocked but happy. Ben's ghost never returned.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's kind of like a bedside apparition, but slightly delayed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of only two family ghost stories from her.
And, okay. I was going to say, did she ever see any? Or if only she did, one, she just didn't acknowledge it.
There was only one other ghost story that my mom ever told me. And I kind of put it on the, I think she was medicated side because she was very, very sick at the time. Okay. And she was home. Now, the house that she grew up in was a hand brick built home, not by the family, but it was already over a century old in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. And basically, she never really said if anything strange happened, but one day she was staying home from school. She was very, very sick and she was on cough syrup. So mind you that. And she remembers sitting straight up in her bed and looking to the hallway and basically seeing a shadow man standing in her doorway, staring at her. Immediately ducked back into her bed and pulled the covers over her head and wished it away as much as she could. And it's an interesting story because shadow men do appear to people like that. But since my mom was on medication at the time and had just woken up from a nap, I kind of put it in the I'm not so sure side. Mm-hmm. But the ghost story with Ben is very interesting because it is a ghost interacting with the people around him in a busy high school hallway the middle of the day, brightly lit by both windows and the lights above. Mm-hmm. And all he says is, "Tell Abby I love her," and then just walks away.
Mm.
So, and have my mom ever, to this, sorry?
Go ahead. I was going to say, have you ever had to do that with someone?
I have. It almost reflects a ghost story that I have myself with one of my best friends, which I can tell. My best friend's still alive. So that's that's a good thing. But I was going to say with my mom, she's still friends with Abby.
Good.
So Abby does check in on her from time to time. So they have been lifelong friends now. With the ghost story that I have that reflects it, I don't know if I've ever told it on this show. I have told it on other shows. So stop me if you've heard it before. So it was my senior year in high school, and I was staying up around 10 p.m. doing homework. I was actually doing my Japanese homework, Japanese linguistics homework. And just kind of minding my own business. And I look up and I see two of my friends who had recently passed away standing at the end of my bed. And it was a very big shock to see them because they had passed away no more than 2 weeks beforehand.
Oh, ooh, man.
So this is my friend John that I went to school with since elementary school. And then my friend Nick, who I knew through the band scene in Northern Indiana. John was a very... I love you, John. You were super nerdy. Super duper nerdy. So I was in band, in marching band, in jazz band, and he was in orchestra. And since we grew up in the same neighborhood, and we had 40-minute drive between my high school and home.
Oh, wow.
I would often take him home because orchestra and band would end around the same time. And he was always fiddling with my radio station because he didn't like the pop music that I would listen to. He wanted to listen to something else. So he would fiddle with that all the time. That will get to a different part in a little bit. So it was the summer before my senior year, and there was a girl he really, really liked. And he and a group of friends plus her went to Indiana Dunes, which is now a national park, to go swimming and have fun, which is a normal thing to do for us Hoosiers in Northern Indiana. And the girl that he really, really liked was not a strong swimmer. And she went too far out and the riptide caught her. John swam after her, got her out, but unfortunately he was taken. And they found him about 2 miles up coast about 3 days later. It was a shock to my friends and I. We hadn't had someone die that so traumatically in our friends group before. So, and his parents were very angry. Just at our graduation, his dad went on a... We had a special memorial for him and had basically... what would be like a ghost light on the stage for him with a cap and a gown and a diploma. And his dad went up to accept it and just gave a tirade of a speech. This guy was so mad. And for losing him. And he had a younger sister and she had a hard time through high school after that. She was only a few grades younger than us. So that it was a shock. But to describe John, he was in symphony. He worked at the Gap. He wore a lot of what we would call preppy clothes. So look at khaki cargo pants, polos, and that's how he dressed. And very short, trimmed hair. He was always very well groomed. So it was hard losing him. On the opposite, we have Nick. Nick, I didn't know quite as well. In fact, he was almost just like an acquaintance buddy from another band. I knew his name and he was lucky I remembered it. ADHD, you kind of forget people's names. You go, you with spiky hair. Like, it wasn't a mean thing. It was just, I didn't see him frequently enough for it to stick. And he had spiky gelled hair that looked like a pufferfish.
No,
if you remember the early aughts, the guys would gel their hair into like little and he was spikes. Very much a punk. He wore Junko jeans, so those really wide leg, super wide leg jeans, always in black. He would always have a tank top and often have a mesh tank top or shirt over it.
Wallet chain.
He would ball chain, wallet chain, have all the hardware. His nails would be painted black.
Awesome. Like
really hardcore. And he was in a punk rock band. Okay. And I was in a band that was trying to just exist. But he would give bass lessons to my friend. And I don't know if I want to use her real name. I'm going to call her Lynn. So he would give bass lessons to Lynn so that we could play Weezer covers, basically, for my band. And and so really Lynn knew him more than I did, and that's, and they would hang out and have lunch and stuff. And in fact, Lynn had had, and I'm sorry to out this, Lynn, but this is an important fact, a crush on both of them at some point of her life. And so you can imagine my shock.
Yeah.
Oh wait, I haven't talked about how Nick died. So trigger warning for this one, we are going to talk about suicide.
No.
Nick apparently was battling a lot more than he was letting on. And this is one of those big, you don't know some people are battling things until they're gone. Mm-hmm. We did not know that Nick was battling a monstrous load of depression when he passed away. He decided to commit suicide in his bathroom. And we discovered it when he showed up late to school one day. Because although he was a punk, although he was a rocker, he played the electric guitar in our pep band. He was a very good student and always showed up to school. And it was a shock when he didn't show up. And no one knew where he was. This was the era before cell phones. Yeah. So we didn't know. And we got the word around lunchtime, when one of his friends had told his homeroom teacher what had happened. And he was a grade above me. Actually he would have had to have passed away a few months prior when I was a junior and he was a senior. And that was hard because he did a lot with the music community, especially the underground music community of Northern Indiana, which is surprisingly larger than you would think it would be. Mm-hmm. And we missed him a lot. And of course, Lynn took everything really hard because we have basically lost two of our really close friends within months of each other. We're going to jump back to around October of my senior year. So I'm going to out my age here, 2002. And I'm doing my Japanese homework and I look up and I see both John and Nick standing at the end of my bed. And I'm like, oh, hi, fellas. What you doing here? And what was remarkable about them, more Nick than John, was they were wearing white or shades of cream. Huh. So for John, this wasn't too odd because this was like he was wearing his Gap polo shirt with another shirt underneath it, layered, and then which was white and cream. And then he was wearing light colored cargo pants and then he was wearing brown shoes. And I'm looking at John and I'm like, yeah, that tracks. That's about right. You would wear something like that. And I look over at Nick. Nick's still wearing the hardware. Nick's still wearing the Junko jeans, but everything is white or shades of cream instead of black on neon green, including his fingernails, which are now painted white. And I'm just looking at Nick and I'm like, I'm sorry, dude, what's going on here?
Well, did he answer?
They were at peace. They had managed. I don't want to say managed. They had both passed on. They were in Elysian fields. They were in heaven. They were not earthbound. They had moved on. And I find that when souls have managed to, they're not stuck on earth. They're not earthbound. When they have passed on, they have gone to heaven. They can come back and visit. My dad has done this a number of times. So has my grandmother. And people tend to wear light colors. Like,
interesting.
They're wearing white or cream or khaki, and even when that's not their personal taste, like Nick. So it was very strange. And yeah, they said we've moved on. We're good. We're okay. Tell Lynn that we love her and we're okay. And that was it. And then with that, they were gone. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to write that on a post-it note and put it in my folder so I don't forget. Now, mind you, although Lynn at the time, we were friends, we were not the bestest of friends. Yeah. Where me coming over and saying, hey, I got a message for you from our dead friends, that would have come off as super duper weird.
Yeah.
And, but that's exactly what I did. I pulled her aside and I said, I know I'm going to sound insane right now, but John and Nick were at my place last night and they told me to tell you that they love you and everything's okay. And she immediately burst into tears and hugged me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's going on here?
I'm going to cry hearing it. God.
she was more distraught than she was letting on. She was putting on a very brave face over losing both of these friends so suddenly. And she was like, this is exactly what I needed to hear. She had been praying to hear back from them. And this is how they decided to go about it. They went through me to tell her.
Yeah.
And after that, she was just like, yeah, you see ghosts and dead things. And I'm like, I do see ghosts and dead things. And she never questioned it since then, which is, I'm always impressed. So
that
is a very heavy story. But it is comforting to know that people do pass over and they will come visit you and say everything's okay. And a lot of people, it happens in dreams.
Yeah.
So they just boom, right, brushing teeth, like what happened earlier this year with my uncle, brushing my teeth, and there he is. And I'm like, hey there, Uncle Chuck, I think you have news for me, don't you? yes, you did. So,
yeah, that's cool. Not losing two teenagers, that's just awful.
Yeah, it's hard. It's when I read about teenagers who have committed suicide or have died in very traumatic ways, I immediately think of John and Nick, and I can empathize immensely with people who have lost their loved ones.
Yeah.
And I've mentioned before, I've seen two people commit suicide in front of me, and please don't do that.
What do you mean in front of you?
Oh,
like you were standing there as they died, or it was
in one case, yes,
back
in another case, I watched it as a witness. Well, both of them were witnesses. Have I never said this on the air?
I think you have mentioned it, but I don't know if you've gone into great detail.
Okay,
at least I'm not remembering.
I don't know. Do you want to hear these stories?
Yes,
okay,
yeah.
We have other listener stories. After this, I swear we'll get onto other stories. You don't have to listen to me. These haunt me every day. So if I tear up a little bit, this is why. The first one was in 2000, so 24 years ago. I was on the Yamanote line sliding into Harajuku Station in Tokyo. And this was before they got all the safety bars for these trains.
Yeah. Okay.
And a woman decided that right then and there was when she wanted to end it all. Okay. And I got to watch, and this is again, trigger warning, it's gross. I got to watch all parts of her body and her brain splatter onto the windshield of the train.
Oh my God.
And I watched people vomiting from the platform. And my friend Keiko was standing next to me. And she was like, what's going on? And I was standing next to the door that looked into the engineer's little area. He was being sick at the time.
Were you on the platform?
He was in the train. There was the conductor who, this was before everything was automated. So he was controlling the brakes and everything.
What about and you, though?
Sorry?
You. Were you on the train or on the platform?
I was on the train.
Okay.
I was looking in I was looking through the little door that you can look into the engineer's cab, and then that has the windshield.
Right.
And basically, I saw that just, I watched her splatter. Were like very wet water balloons. And and brain matter. And Keiko is slightly shorter than me, which is remarkable because I'm already pretty short. And she was like, what's going on? Because she could hear us like suddenly stop. We hit something and then we suddenly stopped. And we didn't even make it completely to the platform because she jumped about the first fourth of the platform. So our train didn't even make it into the station proper. And I blocked her. I was like, do not look. You don't want to see. And the engineer, the conductor at the front was frantically radioing people. And he basically put on the emergency beacon and was just like, this is what's happened. And you can hear him doing all that. And then he looked over and saw me looking at him through the window and put the blind down. And at the same time, there was a group of French tourists who were very angry that we hadn't managed to make it to the platform because they wanted to go see Shinjuku or Harajuku. And I was like, I'm going to be very honest with you. We're going to be here for a little while because somebody just died. And you could see out the windows, like the people on the platform being sick and then going back downstairs to go to where the restrooms were and everything. We were there for 3 hours as medical investigation happened and they basically collected her. And then we were eventually allowed off and we kind of went to a coffee house and just sat there for a while because all the joy that we had for the day was just, we're like, you know what? We're just to sit here and appreciate being here and feel very bad for the woman. We went to a shrine. We gave offerings for her. It was a very much more of a melancholy day. The second one also includes a train. My luck with trains. This was in Rhode Island just a few years ago. And you can actually find the news articles still about the poor girl. This one was not a suicide. This was a girl who was walking down the railroad for the Amtrak that runs along the East Coast. And it was a commuter rail. And she was too close to the rails and was sucked under. And her friend witnessed everything.
Oh, God.
As did I, because I was walking the dogs.
Oh, cat. So
myself and neighbors who were in their homes when they heard it happen. And mind you, the train, basically, there is where I lived in Rhode Island. I was literally walking to the bridge and the pedestrian pass goes underneath the commuter rail. The commuter train went up over me and the two girls were literally 50 yards away, just past the bridge. And they weren't supposed to be walking there, but it was a shortcut through town. And basically, as I approached the bridge, I saw the girls and then I then only saw one and I could hear her friend screaming and immediately called 911. 911 was there within 3 minutes, maybe even two. But it was a very cut and dry what happened. So there's cameras and stuff. And Amtrak has its own surveillance and kind of police force. So
they do.
They do. To all the railroads, there's a special investigative unit for accidents.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Like the airplane.
Yeah. So that was they did take a statement from me, but I said they were walking along and then suddenly two became one. And that's all I can really say. There's a third incident. This gentleman survived. I was walking to school. He decided to jump off of the 7th floor of Ballantyne Hall, which is where my language classes were located. Mm-hmm. I remember walking up to the quad and looking up and seeing a chair fall out of this building. I'm like, ha, that's weird. And then a man fell out of the building. he hit a stone canopy that protected the entranceway, broke both of his legs, but he survived.
Oh, wow.
But Ballantyne's also super haunted. So, Kat's being a downer today.
How? I was going to say, this took a dark turn.
I'm sorry. I am fascinated by stories like this, but what is in your karma, Kat, that you witness these things? Like, I've never seen anything like that. I don't even think I've ever seen, like, a major car accident happen.
I don't know.
Not that you have bad karma.
Yeah.
You know.
I think going through the trauma of seeing this helps me with other people processing their trauma. So it's multiple times. I kind of sometimes feel like a grief mentor, unlicensed, of course, where I've gone through very terrible things. So people who have also had bad things happen can come to me and we can kind of commiserate over this is what happened and this is how we walk through it. Mm-hmm. You're never going to leave it. You never put it down. Yeah. But we're going to find a way to live healthily with it.
Yeah.
And the amount of people, even since I was real little in elementary school, the amount of people that would come up to me and talk about death and ghosts, this is very much a part of it. Their trauma. And for some people, their ghosts are ghosts of trauma they've had.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of primed to it since I was very young. And also had trauma when I was very young. Which sometimes I wonder if the ghosts that I see are just trauma playing out and trying to work its way through my brain.
Interesting.
So, yeah. When it gets dismissed is when I have friends like my friend Tiffany, who is also a psychic medium, who's like, yeah, I see all those soldiers just like you do. And I'm like, all right, so that's not a trauma thing. That's us seeing something that's dead. So, or with Chris, it's having somebody who's outside of myself validating who I am seeing.
Well, yeah, how would you know otherwise?
Yeah.
Really?
And there was times when I was in high school and in middle school and dealing with a lot of the hauntings. And I was like, I am legitimately going nuts. Am I having a psychotic break?
Yeah.
And then I started reading more books and I didn't really pay attention to the psychics on TV, but I would, I don't know. I just found some really dependable people I could trust to help walk me through that.
Have you always known it was weird to see these things, or did it feel natural to you? And if it felt natural, when did you realize it wasn't?
It's extremely natural for me. And I realized it wasn't when I was in middle school. Actually, no, when I was in elementary school and having sleepovers and I would see my grandma. I know I've told this story where I'd see my grandma floating over my friends, just checking on them. And they would freak out because they didn't normally see their dead grandmother or grandparents walking through their house, but they were there. And it was just through social cues and context where I learned that unsolved mysteries, definitely, where being able to see these things was not considered standard and maybe not mentally healthy. Mm. And I was just like, but this is normal for me. I feel the most at ease when I can just say, yes, the dead are around. They're not trying to possess you. They're sometimes trying to comfort you.
Yeah.
And most of the time, they're just curious.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're being impish, but it's just, they're much like how they were when they were alive. And so it's very natural for me. So when I'm able to talk to people like Chris or my friend Tiffany, and we can all kind of go share experiences, if you ever notice, we get really buzzy, is because we don't get to talk about these things without judgment very often.
Yeah, I definitely felt that with you and Chris.
Yeah.
Because you guys were just going back and forth. And I'm like, I'm just sit back and listen.
We don't have to explain what we're feeling. We can just state who we're seeing. There, all those walls come down and you can talk. And there's only a few people who I've been able to kind of just commiserate with like that.
Yeah. Cool. I did have a question about that. I know you guys have talked about your spirit guides. Mm-hmm. Can you see other people's spirit guides, or can you only see yours?
I could probably sense other people's spirit guides. I don't necessarily see them.
See them. Okay.
Yeah. So, but that one is going to be a very personal question, because I set up a lot of boundaries. I don't even see my own.
Right. Okay. Power.
Gotcha. So I put up a lot of boundaries of, I don't want to see you. After seeing the things that I did in Gettysburg, I was just like, nope, I'm not going to see those. Like, we're going to just, I'm going to sense when you're somewhere. I can sense if you're a few feet in front of me or whatnot and get a mental image. I'm not going to visually do it because I will lose my cookies. And it was kind of the same at Mansfield and at Pennhurst. There are some spirits who like to really prank you, and they will show up in the most disgusting form they possibly could. In my case, it's with their eyes bugging out. And I'm just like, no, stop. Oh, God, no. And it's just,
okay, that's mean. When they do
it. It's very mean. But so I don't see other people's spirit guides, but I can feel them. And basically, it's a very positive, buzzy energy. Okay. So,
well, we have Emily, and it is a story that took place in Saddamsville.
Yes.
So, shall I read it?
Sure.
Yes, please.
Okay. It says, when I was 9, family friends bought a house in the Saddamsville area. We went over for a summer barbecue holiday, probably 4th of July. They had a daughter around my age who was also the youngest, and while everyone else was outside, we decided to go play in the attic where there was a dollhouse. See these dollhouses. Because our siblings picked on us, we locked the attic door from the inside when we went up. There was a bedroom up there and a spare room, with the dollhouse in the center surrounded by boxes that were partially unpacked. She also had a new black kitten who was playing with us. We were there for about half an hour when we heard the door creak open. We both froze. We knew for certain we had locked the door. We heard footsteps on the stairs slowly coming up. And when they got to the top, the kitten hissed and arched its back, staring right at the top of the stairs, which was empty. Something fell off of one of the boxes near the door, and the kitten jumped and clawed in that direction. Then in a circle around the room, one after another, things fell off each box, with the kitten following and leaping at nothing. We screamed and ran down the stairs and were stopped by the still locked door. We unlocked it and ran all the way outside and where our family members were, including our siblings. We screamed and told them what had happened. No one believed us. I never went back to that house.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bad experience.
That kind of had a Beetlejuice feel to it a little bit.
It really does have a Beetlejuice feel to it.
Well, does the whole neighborhood have sort of a haunting vibe? She doesn't say where it is incidentally.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
It's not a big area.
Well, they also had a lot of fatalities after the 1913 flood. Anything that was up on that incline up to about the church, Saddamsville Rectory, got flooded when that hit. And so you had a lot of fatalities in those homes. But I don't get the feeling that that was from that. I get the feeling that this was somebody who had lived in the house that was attached to that family. Yeah. So I don't know why. I just do.
How interesting.
But that is...
Was the kitten playing or it was
scared? No, the kitten was typing at it. Whatever it was freaking the kitten out.
Okay. The cat could see something.
Yeah.
Or sense something.
Yeah. So like imagine somebody like a Sid character coming up and causing some mischief and the cat wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. The cat was really warning the girls, hey, this isn't something to be playing with. This is, and the fact that it was kind of playfully maliciously like throwing things off of the room.
Mm-hmm.
That's very spooky.
Yeah.
It's I can see why they would be frightened and want to leave. And that was an intelligent entity, basically.
Mm.
So thank you, Emily, for that story. And just proving that Saddamsville is truly the spookiest place in Cincinnati.
Oh, totally.
I still kind of wish we could have bought the rectory.
Yeah, what happened to it?
Because it was for sale.
Yeah.
So hopefully somebody bought it.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to make it into a ghost house.
Maybe.
So, and then we have the final, there's three stories that Annie tells us. So, I'm going to pause again and we can watch it and then we can.
Okay, I could start with the one in Kentucky. Yeah. First, say your name and, my name's Annie Dollins, and I've had a number of experiences. The one I'll start with is the one I had in Kentucky, and it was at one of the state parks where there was a conference going on, and I checked in early in the afternoon, and felt a little weird in the room. I went out for take a walk in the park, and was gone for quite a while, came back, and it didn't feel right in the room, and I went down to dinner, came back, and then I was going to settle in for bed, and I had my PJs on, everything was set out for the next day, and I just didn't feel right. And that feeling just got stronger and stronger till where I felt like I was not safe. And I put my clothes back on, and sat up and read and stayed up the whole night because there was no sleeping at all. It felt so bad in the room. And so the next day, I'm going to go to the conference and I go to the front desk and talk to them. And I asked them, I said, you get complaints about that room, don't you? And they said, what room were you in? And I told them. And they said, oh, did you see her? And so it clued me in that there was something going on in that room and that they knew that that room was not a good room, but they were still booking it out if they weren't happy. So that was, I bet, it felt so bad in that room, so ominous. It was like, get your clothes on, you might have to run and leave. So that was one of my experiences. As a kid, I never felt right in our house. My dad had built the house and a little place called Gonneau. And I knew the basement wasn't right. There were a number of small mounds in the area. And I don't know if he had dug out a mound or something like that, but I knew the basement was no place to be. And they didn't beat me or anything, but to get me to go down in the basement, it was like a world travesty. It was a trial. I just knew I was not supposed to be in the basement. But then other things happened. And then I moved into a home or house in Mount Annos. And we were rehabbing it. And sometimes the tenant downstairs would say, oh, it was noisy last night. And we would not have been there working on the place. But there'd be like things dropping or water running. They would hear. And we would hear about that. And we moved in and the first time that it really felt uncomfortable was I was getting ready to take a bath and I turned the water on in the tub and left the room, came back, and then all of a sudden the sink water, the faucet turned on.
Oh.
And I ran out of the house like crazy and I came back in, but that was one time in that house. And the water you could just see it rotate on its own.
Whoa,
make it. And it was like, oh, this is not good. And then I saw the spirit twice in the home. One time we were working on the second and third floor, and she was on the stairway going up to the third floor. And she was dressed sort of like a 19th century period dress, hair swept up. Nothing fancy, very plain. And she was there for just like about 15 seconds and then gone. And we were having a lot of work done in the second floor at one point. And I was upstairs, it was like 3 a.m. and I was working on my dissertation. And we had just got a new dining room set for that room. And all of a sudden I heard all these chairs moving back and forth, back and forth. And I was sort of afraid. And so I peeked over the stairwell, looked, and they were moving back.
Oh, wow.
So that was one time. And then couple more times where things were being moved. I mean, you'd look for something and it'd be gone, and then you'd find it in the weirdest spot. And it got to the level where I told the spirit one time, I said, you know, I can't handle this much evidencing of yourself. Could you please stop? And it did stop for a while. But then the tenants downstairs asked for a meeting, and they said, we have a ghost. And I said, no, the ghost is upstairs. And they said, no, there were two girls downstairs, and one had a boyfriend. And if they would argue, like if they were in the kitchen, the chairs would move back and forth. Well, one time they had a big discussion, didn't go well. So he went in the living room, sat down on the couch, and all of a sudden there was a big indentation on the couch as if somebody was sitting there. So they were freaked out by that. And then, let's see. Oh, I eventually moved out of the second and third floors down to the first floor where the tenants were. They had left. So I moved down there. And then I was setting up the bathroom with, you know, towels and soaps and stuff like that. And I turned around because I felt like somebody was watching me, and she was there. And it was the same figure that I saw before in the stairway. And she just was there for about another 10 seconds or so.
10 seconds is a long time.
It is. 15 was a long time, too. And she was there, and then she was gone. So those are some of my experiences that I've had.
Those are amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing these with us.
You're welcome. It was fun.
All okay, right. So those were Annie's stories in Mount Adams. And wow, Annie, you experienced the whole gamut of classic haunts.
Well, yeah, like throughout her life.
Yeah.
Not just like once.
Right. Yeah. There was so... I should have taken notes. There were so many stories in that short period of time.
I told you it was a lot.
To me. Yeah. Definitely. So I was just kind of focusing on the Mount Adams stories, but yeah, that feeling of not being safe is one that I definitely have felt at haunted locations. Have you, either of you ever been at a location and then at night you just overwhelmingly and almost unreasonably were like, I need to put my clothes on and leave immediately. I feel unwelcome right now.
I don't know if I've ever felt that.
I don't think I felt unwelcome, but you know what I felt at Anchorage.
Yeah.
Made me want to get out of there.
Yeah. So think about that kind of feeling, is that intense, just you got to get out. The flight instinct just kicks in and you need to be out of there. I've gotten it at Pennhurst. And I've gotten it at Sedamsville, or not Sedamsville. We just talked about Sedamsville, at the Stanley Hotel. And I was in my hotel room. And the story that she told echoes stories I've heard from other people, and also ones that I have myself. I've already told enough stories tonight. But it's just, yeah, I feel for her. It's a terrifying feeling to get.
I want to know what happened in the hotel room to...
Do you really want to know what happened in hotel rooms?
Yes.
No.
That's my morbid curiosity. Like, I want to know it before I know it. And then after I know it, I go, oh, I didn't want to know that.
Why did I do that? Yeah. Why did I bring this black light in here? What was I? What was
oh, God, no. No, no, no. No, we'll never do that.
Yeah. I've certainly been in enough con hotels where, like, they don't want to have something expensive. And like there was one we used to go to in Chattanooga, and the hotel they used there, like, somebody had blood on their curtains. It was like, these places were pretty, they weren't like five-star establishments.
Yeah. No.
But even if they are five-star, who knows? Like, I've heard some weird things get left behind after certain kind of conventions.
Yes. And also there are people that die in hotels.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's hard to say what happened, but whatever it was,
made an impression.
Yeah. Strong negative impression. So there's that. Man, what was the
I was saying, seeing a spirit for 10 seconds. That's what I said. 10 seconds is a long time.
It is a very long time.
Like, that's not like out of the corner of your eye. Yeah. That's like you're like staring.
She wanted to be seen. She did. I am here. This is my space.
Yep.
And I'm not sure I like you in it.
Yeah. And the fact that Annie was able to also describe the outfit and the type of hairstyle and everything, mm-hmm. she got a good look at this woman and the spirit who's there, who clearly doesn't like furniture or likes it in a particular way. But she did the thing that I always suggest for people is to say, look, you need to go. Like, yeah. we're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We're,
well, she listened. She just moved to another floor.
She just went and harassed somebody else. Yeah. But the construction happening on all the floors. And I was just like, yep, you're always construction stirs up more hauntings. Yeah. Always.
Well, because you're changing their home.
You're changing their home. Yeah. Stuff is going, like the one time that we heard the kids running up and down the basement. Oh, a fun thing was when we were redoing the basement. Basically, we were pulling mm-hmm. up all the original carpeting and putting down new flooring. But we hear the kids still, as just a small aside, we will hear the kids still once in a while playing with little dude's toys down here.
Oh,
and
really?
The dogs will just immediately perk up, and I'm just like, and it's always really late at night around this time, and their ears perk up and everything, and I'm like, kids, knock it off, and immediately it stops.
Wow.
So, yeah.
They just want to play, Cat.
They just want to play with. There's so many things to play with. It doesn't help
play
that
with
a,
us forever.
Yeah.
And ever.
But going back to Annie's stories, yeah, that it's. It's interesting that it was one female ghost causing all that heartache.
Well, yeah, I'm going to say if anyone's very particular about their home, it'd be a woman from that era.
I would say. It was interesting that she was disturbed by when the couple downstairs, when the girl would fight with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That the ghost would show up and move things around and stuff. And I wonder if that happens a lot too. Like if there's conflict in the family, if sometimes spirits react to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is a good thing to meditate on, basically.
Yeah. Well, they say that's how, like, poltergeists with teenage hormones raging is they're attracted to that turmoil and they manifest.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, definitely hauntings are tied with trauma. This is firmly what I believe. They're definitely in how it manifests is just however it speaks to you. So I think with that, that's all of our stories for tonight, isn't it?
It is. This was a super giant episode.
I am so sorry, Christina, for making you edit an extra size, a supersized episode. But I appreciate everyone who wrote in and shared their stories with us today. And
awesome
if you're still here, wow, you've just listened to a lot of stories that run the gamut of... Some are sweet, some are how did you deal with that, and some are angry Victorian women. So
that's surely the name of a novel.
Angry Victorian Women. If not, it should be.
I know. I think it should be a club. I'm going to start
there
that.
We go. I like that more. Yeah.
When what was that woman that went around to the bars and was
Carrie Nation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Her she just came into my head. Yeah, she was awesome.
She said she couldn't smash all the bars in Cincinnati though.
Nope.
We had too many.
yep we did.
On that note,
on that note, thank you everyone for listening to another wonderful episode of the Cincinnati, or whoa, what am I doing? I just regressed like 100 episodes to the Hometown Haunts podcast. I was taking it all the way to the beginning. I am your host, Kat Kloko, and along with me are Jen Kohler and Christina Wald. You can follow us at Cincinnati Cabinet of Curiosities on Instagram, and also join us on the Hometown Haunts podcast page on Facebook to share your own ghost stories that we will read or now even maybe record and have on the episode. So thank you all for joining us. happy 100 episodes to all of us. Yay. Woo. We did it. We'll keep going. And we look forward to sharing your spooky stories from your neck of the woods.
Yes.
So good night.
Good night.